Good morning, welcome back to Nachyami. Today we're going to be focusing on Yirmiyahu Perek Memhei, the 45th Perek of Yirmiyahu. So there seems to be a lot going on in this Perek. This is really Yirmiyahu's last address to the people in Egypt explicitly. We know that at this point in time, Yirmiyahu has been taken to Egypt against his will. He advised people not to go to Egypt. They didn't listen to him. He and Baruch were taken down in Golus to Mitzrayim with the remainder of the Jews. And now he finally addresses them in Mitzrayim themselves. This is after performing the sign of burying the bricks upon which he says the Nebuchadnezzar will ultimately place his tent. And this is now where he arrives and turns to. Yirmiyahu's speech is divided really into three sections as he addresses these people. You can imagine now a broken man, a man who not even listened to even after the goddess, now is in Egypt and he says three sections. The first section is where he accuses them of doing Avodah Zorah in Mitzrayim. And he talks about how HaKadosh Baruch Hu had always sent Nevi'im to them to stop doing Avodah Zorah before the punishment came, and they were not interested in listening. I told you not. Don't do what I hate you doing, serving Avodah Zorah, and you did not listen to me to serve other deities. That's section number one. In this section, it's worth noticing that he talks about how the Nevi'im always come earlier than the calamity. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives ample time for people to notice that they're doing wrong, but they don't listen. We're going to see that this will actually contribute to their excuse in a few moments. Also in this section, it's worthwhile noticing that there's an accusation, as the Malbim points out, both in the past, not doing teshuvah for the past, but also what they continue to do like their parents. Then the next section, Yirmiyahu now addresses them and says, but he asks them, Lama atem osim ra'a gadola es nafshe sam la'achris lachem ish ve'isha olel v'yonek mitoch Yehuda. Why did you all go down to exile? That's question number one. Number two is to lekater, to anger me, and lekater le'elohim achirim beretz Yisrael, to serve Avodah Zarah. So apparently it seems that the Jews have enculturated into Egyptian society very fast, as Jewish immigrants tend to do when they move to new cultures. They tried to rise up to the top of those societies very, very fast. You've now joined the Egyptian ranks. You become very much like them. Why did you leave the land of Yehuda and serve Avodah Zarah? Is there potentially a connection between these two accusations, leaving the land and serving Avodah Zarah? So the Chidah, in his commentary on Tanakh, called the Chomas Anach, actually addresses this, and he says, yes, you thought that maybe by leaving the land of Israel, you'd be less culpable for the Avodah Zarah you would be doing, because in the palace of the king, and you're dismissing the king, that's terrible. But maybe if you leave the palace of the king, it's less overt. He says, well, that's terrible. How could you do that? In fact, it's more of a chil Hashem that you decide to be under the celestial powers of the Egyptians rather than under the celestial powers of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's a terrible crime. In fact, this whole accusation, these two ideas are linked, and the Gemara famously tells us in Kesubos, Daf Kufiyud and Mabay, is that a person, Adar b'chutz la'aretz k'mishu e'lo e'loika, a person who dwells in chutz la'aretz, it is as if they do not have a God. Obviously, we who live in the diaspora certainly do have a God, but what the Gemara is trying to say is that they are now, the Jews are under another set of powers, of celestial powers. There's more intermediaries, there's less hashkocha, Hashem's divine exact providence in chutz la'aretz, and this is all learnt out from numerous psukim. What Yirmiyahu I was saying over here is the two are connected. When you're leaving Chutz Laaretz, it's a chil Hashem, and it's like you're serving Avodah Zarah because you actually are in this particular case. These two accusations in the second part of his speech. And finally, in the last part of his attack on them, he says, therefore, I'm going to bring destruction. Like I destroyed Mitzrayim, I'm going to destroy you, to the point that he says at the end of the speech, which is Pasuk Yudalad, V'lo yeh polit v'sarid l'sha'eris Yehuda ha'ba'im l'gur sham be'eretz Mitzrayim. There will not be a single refugee. No one will turn except for a few refugees. So will there be survivors? Will there not be survivors? According to this, will the Babylonians completely finish them off in Egypt or not? So the Malbim says, well, there are two groups of people who live in Egypt. There are those who say, let's be Egyptian. Let's learn Egyptian. Let's become professors in Egyptian universities. Let's rise to the top of the Egyptian politics and we'll make an impression here. Those people will be completely killed. There's a second group who says, no, we know it's temporary. We need to go back to the land of Israel. But right now, we'll make ourselves comfortable. So in that group, Yirmiyahu is saying that most of them will be killed and only a few refugees will eventually actually leave. Rashi points out that of the people who will leave, ultimately, Rashi quoting the Midrash Seder Olam, which is the timeline Midrash, who says that Yirmiyahu and Baruch ben Neria themselves ultimately will return, will actually leave in the 27th year of the kingship of Nebuchadnezzar. We'll have more on that later as to Yirmiyahu's end. So what do the people respond to? This is a very serious conversation that they've now been, accusations are pretty direct. Up till now, when the Jews don't like Yirmiyahu, either they ignore him or they imprison him. What do they do now? So at this point in time, we really hear a remarkable response. They turn to Yirmiyahu and they say, all the men, all the women say to him, everybody responds to him. It doesn't seem like we see Yochanan ben Kerach or the leaders right now. It just seems to be the people. They say, Hadavar asher dibarnu eleinu b'shem Hashem, enenu shomim elecha. Sorry, Yirmiyahu, we're not listening to you. We have no interest in listening to what you're doing. Listen how brazen it is. They're absolutely not interested in what he's saying. Why? So they say, well, there's historical precedent. From Pasuk Yud Zayin to Yud Ches, they explain, look, we were around the times of Yoshiyahu HaMelech. We saw that up to the time of Yoshiyahu HaMelech, that the kings of Yehuda, the kings of Israel, were serving Avodah Zorah here and there, everywhere across the country there was Avodah Zorah. And we're pretty secure, you know, except for a little bit of a problem with Assyria here and there, and, you know, ultimately Yerushalayim survived. Comes along Yoshiyahu, does this huge spiritual reform, and there's no Avodah Zorah, everything's fine. And since the times of Yoshiyahu HaMelech, Babel and Egypt, and there's been problems. So from our perspective, it looks like when you don't do Avodah Zorah, there's problems. When you do Avodah Zorah, there are there are not problems. And then at the end of the speech, as the Abar Benel understands in Yotes Tuchof, it's or just actually Pasuk Yuches, it sounds like the women are responding themselves. It sounds like the women address Yirmiyahu and they say to him, look, you're accusing us, because it's clear that Yirmiyahu is addressing both the men and the women explicitly. And they say, do you think we were serving Avodah Zorah ourselves? No, it was with our husband's consent and approval. I mean, to say each side, the Abar Benel points out, is blaming the other side. So the men are saying it was our wives, and the wives are saying it was with our husband's consent, and everybody's blaming each other as to why it was they're serving Avodah Zorah. Very, very sad state of affairs. What does Yirmiyahu say to this? So in response to this, this next little section is Yirmiyahu Pasuk Chof, towards the end, and he basically says the following. First of all, he tries to set the historical record straight, and he says, look, you served Avodah Zorah for a long time. That had an impact. And that's the reason why you're going into Golis. There was too little of a time of lag afterwards to fix that up. In fact, the Divrei Yisrael and Parshas Lech Lecha points out, one of the Chassid giants points out, that although it is true that they misaligned themselves with the direct connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, they moved away from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, they served Avodah Zorah. Even when you move away from Avodah Zorah, it just means to say you're back to neutral. You haven't reconnected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It takes time to fix that relationship. You can leave the negativity, but it doesn't mean to say you're back in positive. And that was their mistake, but nonetheless, they're not listening. It's too late for them to listen. And finally, Yirmiyahu then says two last things. He says, you made a vow. It's quite clear that as you read their speech carefully, it sounds like they say, we have to do this, we're going to do this, we're going to serve Avodah Zorah. So Yirmiyahu says, you say that the reason why you have to serve Avodah Zorah is because you vowed to serve Avodah Zorah and you want to be all frum, not to transgress your vow. He says that doesn't work. There's no way that you can be held accountable for that. You can get out of Nadarim. You don't hold on as if you're stuck because of your word, when what you're doing is much worse than that. That seems to be one of the arguments, one of the false arguments they make. And so finally, Yirmiyahu says, I'm sending Melech Bavel. He's going to come in. He's going to find all of you. He's going to destroy all of you. He's going to kill you. There's going to be famine. V'zos lachem ha'ois, says Yirmiyahu, and he has the sign. Ki poked ani aleichem b'mokom hazeh, leman teidu ki kom yokumu divrei aleichem l'ra. You don't believe me? I'll give you a sign. What's the sign? Hineni nosenes paro chofra, melech Mitzrayim, b'yad oivav, uv'yad mavak she'nafsho. I'm going to give paro chofra in the hands of those who seek him out, as I gave Tzidkiyahu melech Yehuda to the hands of Nebuchadnezzar melech Bavel. Who is Paro Chofra? So the Mitzvot David points out that every king of Egypt is called the Pharaoh. His particular name is Chofra. So this is Pharaoh Chofra. Whereas Abar Benel says, no, it's not even his name. Chofra is sort of like a disgraceful way of describing his name. His name was really Paro, but he was Paro Chofra, sort of like to be, you know, an embarrassment of a king. He's going to be given over. Did this actually happen? So it's interesting, if you look at Josephus in Antiquities on this particular section, which is to be found in Book 10, chapter 9, It's paragraph 7. He actually describes this, and this is how he quotes it. He says, which was the 23rd year of the reign of Nebuchadnezzar, this is the English version. He made an expedition against Celceria, and when he possessed himself of it, he made war against the Ammonites and Moabites, and when he brought these nations under his subjection, he fell upon Egypt in order to overthrow it. He slew the king that reigned and set up another, and he took the Jews that were their captives and led them away to Babylon. And such was the end of the nation of the Hebrews, as it had been delivered down to us, it having twice gone beyond the Euphrates, for the people of the 10 tribes were carried out by Samaria and the Syrians. And so this is what Josephus describes historically, the exact idea that Yirmiyahu has described. This really seems to be the last explicit words we hear of Yirmiyahu, the sign that he's giving. He ends, ironically, with a sign to prove his veracity when all the time he's been talking up till now, but it doesn't seem like people have been listening to him. And ultimately, his sign is to come, is to be, but far late for people to realize the truth. In the meantime, have a wonderful, meaningful day.